Ever More and More, a Merlin fanfic by Match 6P, read by Sophie Nisba. The pairing is Gawain Merlin, rating PG for chivalry. Merlin thought he knew a thing or two about breaking rules, what with the constant violation of his sovereign's decrees, and the perpetual insubordination to his prince, and the practice of illegal magic in secrecy and all. But apparently there was a lot Gawain could teach him about rules and breaking them. For example, Merlin would never, in his wildest moments of ill judgment and lunacy, ever suggest to Arthur that a nobleman should act as a servant to a mere serf. And yet, here they all were. "Absolutely not," Arthur said, facial expression caught somewhere between disgust and incredulity. "Ah, but you can't let him travel through the borderlands alone. They're replete with villains and outlaws. You know how much trouble he attracts, and he's no good with a sword, so it won't even do to arm him. He needs a minder." "What definition of absolutely not did you think I was invoking?" Gawain went on like Arthur wasn't grinding his teeth or flaring his nostrils. "I'll make sure he stays alive, stays fed, stays warm, doesn't get robbed, doesn't get kidnapped, and comes back to Camelot in one piece." Because, really, despite all of the admittedly unlawful things Merlin had done, he had never so brazenly defied the class structure that kept their very civilization stable. A knight, attending a servant on a journey to see said servant's mother? Not only unheard of, but seditious, practically treasonous. And Gawain was suggesting it all with a dashing grin and a jaunty flip of his hair, as though he fully expected Arthur to give him his blessing. It had been a miracle that Merlin was even able to convince Arthur to let him have a few days off to see his mother. Well, miracle wasn't quite the right word. It had been the result of a judicious campaign of hinting, cajoling, pleading, and flat-out whining, kept up over the course of several determined months. And Arthur had finally given in, and Merlin was okay with seizing this hard-won gift gratefully, without making any further demands. Gawain, however, evidently did not share his sentiments. "Merlin needs an escort. Yeldor is far, and the woods are a dangerous place where ruffians lurk. I know, because I used to be one." Gawain turned over his shoulder to wink at Merlin as he pronounced this last remark. Merlin's ears flushed pink. Arthur's entire face flushed pink, for a different, angrier reason, and he roared at them to vacate his presence. Out in the corridor, closed doors separating them from Arthur's fuming, Merlin ruefully returned Gawain's grin. "While I appreciate your entirely unnecessary display of brave rebellion for my sake, I want it on the record that you, Sir Gawain, are insane. Don't worry, Uther outranks Arthur. I got this." There was a lot Gawain could teach him about insanity, too, apparently, because the very next morning Gawain barged without warning into the chamber wherein Uther and his son were partaking of breakfast, and announced that he needed to go on an important and very urgent trip to Yeldor. Immediately. Merlin didn't know what to do with the pitcher of milk he was in the middle of pouring, as Arthur knocked over his cup in surprise, and there was no longer a receptacle to pour milk into. "I'll take Merlin with me to carry my load and clean my clothes, since Prince Arthur has announced that he has no need of him this week," Gawain said breezily. Gawain hissed and presented some sort of facial tic at Merlin, which Merlin was thankfully bright enough to translate into a cue to play along. Right. Merlin cleared his throat. "Oh, please, Sir Gawain, do not make me serve you on my only week off. Oh, woe, the injustice!" "Hush, servant boy, you will listen when a knight of Camelot commands your fealty. Well, that's settled." And with that, Gawain swept Merlin under his arm and pulled him swiftly out of the room, Merlin still holding onto the superfluous milk jug. At the breakfast table, Arthur found it hard to unclench his fist, clutched around his spoon in shock. "I approve of this, Sir Gawain," Uther said conversationally, taking a sip of wine. "He knows how to treat servants properly. Unlike you, being so lax with them, giving them holidays. It's unheard of. Who gives servants holidays? Lenience doesn't breed respect, Arthur." Arthur stared at Uther and struggled against the urge to hurl the spoon at his father. It wasn't his father who needed a spoon in the eye, he reminded himself. It was Gawain. "I still can't believe you did that," Merlin said, urging his horse closer to Gawain's so they could talk. They had been traveling for the better part of a day, and the sun was but a pink smear at the edge of the horizon. Merlin was still mentally replaying the scene from breakfast, and, despite all the floor-scrubbing duty Arthur would undoubtedly punish them with when they returned, he still couldn't help chuckling. Wayne shot him a knowing smile across the distance between their horses. They decided to keep pressing on until they reached the tree line, to avoid sleeping out in the open fields. As such, by the time they were ready to set up camp, they had been riding in the dark for several hours, and Merlin felt chilled to the core. "We need to get a fire going before my fingers freeze off," Gawain said as they hitched their horses. "The loss of my fingers is not something the ladies of Albion should be asked to bear." Merlin hit him lightly in the arm for being uncouth, and got a shove in return, hard enough to land him seated on a log. Gawain pressed his hand to Merlin's shoulder when he tried to get up. "No, stay here. Someone needs to look after our things." "But it'll be faster if I help gather firewood," Merlin protested. "Nonsense. I wasn't kidding about ruffians in the woods. It'll be faster if I can concentrate on gathering firewood without keeping an eye on our belongings and the other eye on you, making sure both are safe." "I'm a grown man, Gawain. I don't need you to make sure I'm safe." "You're a grown man on holiday for the first time in God knows how long, and it would be ungentlemanly of me to let you do menial labor."
"But sit."
So Merlin sat, feeling faintly ridiculous, because Gawain was off tramping around the forest, doing needless grunt work, while Merlin waited like a dainty princess who couldn't get her dress dirty, when Merlin knew full well that he could start a fire in 2 seconds if it weren't for the fact that magic was prohibited. He cleared away some undergrowth, laid out their bedding, made sure the horses had enough to eat, and dug a small pit for their fire. He was in the middle of circling the pit with rocks when, somewhere behind him, Gawain called, "Now what did I say about not doing any menial labor?" Merlin turned, a retort on his lips, and found Gawain a lot closer than he'd thought. Whatever witty thing he had planned to say died away along with all the moisture in his mouth. Gawain was holding a large bundle of wood, biceps bulging, his forehead sweaty from exertion. It was dark, the moon only half full, but he was standing so close that Merlin could make out the streak of dirt on his left cheekbone. So close that Merlin could see the rise and fall of his throat as he swallowed, hard. The back of Merlin's heel hit stone when he tried to take a step backward, and he realized he was stumbling into his own fire pit in a clumsy attempt to not look like a completely besotted maiden for Gawain.
"We should, get that fire started," Merlin said, scrambling around in no particular direction.
Gawain said nothing, merely inclined his head and handed him some tinder from his load, looking amused. Midway through the night, when Merlin had finally gotten comfortable enough on the lumpy ground to fall asleep, the rain began. Their fire kept fizzling out, and by the fifth time Merlin had to get up to restart it, he was feeling ridiculous all over again, and thoroughly awake besides. It would be such a simple thing to use his magic to keep the fire going, but that stupid ban meant he had to keep poking at the embers instead of getting a good night's sleep. Preposterous. Merlin huffed and sighed his annoyance loudly.
"Right, give that up," Gawain said, rolling out of his bedding and pulling Merlin towards him.
"That's not going to stay lit, so let me show you a different way to stay warm." Which was how Merlin ended up snuggled in Gawain's bedclothes, his own covers on top to provide double the warmth, Gawain's arms around his midriff, and Gawain's chest pressed to his back.
"Don't worry," Gawain joked. "I won't try anything that might besmirch your reputation."
"I'm not sure I'd mind if you did," Merlin joked back. There followed a long moment of silence as they both held perfectly still, practically not breathing. The woods were quiet, except for the rustle of innocent nocturnal creatures going about their business, blissfully unaware of the awkwardness one felt when one realized a joke was no longer a joke. By and by, the rigid line of Merlin's back began to relax when Gawain continued not to say anything. Perhaps they could just pretend this incident hadn't happened and never speak of it again. Perhaps Merlin wouldn't have to go down in the court's memory as the loose servant who gave up his virtue to a notoriously philandering, though admittedly charming, knight in the open air atop some trampled weeds.
"Let me get this straight."
"Perhaps not."
"I want you, and you want me."
"Yes, but we won't act on those desires." Gawain smoothly overrode him before he could voice any objections. Merlin didn't want to sigh in relief,
because it wasn't as though he didn't want Wayne to take him roughly on a forest floor. Indeed, it was a scenario that came up not infrequently in his daydreams. It was just that... "This is what it means to be chivalrous and honorable," Merlin said. "To show self-control."
Yes. Well, if this is chivalry and honor, then at least I know why Arthur is always so insufferably bad-tempered. All this self-control is incredibly tiring.
"So sleep if you're so incredibly tired, Sir Gawain," Merlin replied, hiding a smile in Gawain's blanket. Gawain slept. His hands remained respectfully above Merlin's waist for the rest of the night, and in the morning, when they woke, Gawain helped him up with one hand on his elbow and the other on the small of his back, deference and care radiating from his every action. It was almost better than being roughly taken on the forest floor.
As predicted, there were, eventually, ruffians. Three of them, to be precise, who ambushed them with a flurry of daggers and poor planning. They captured Merlin, looped rope around his wrists rather loosely, and thrust him down by a fallen tree, but then forgot to secure the other end of the rope to said tree. They then disarmed Gawain and flung his sword so that it landed laughably close to Merlin. Merlin felt little fear, mostly just embarrassment for the incompetence of their would-be attackers. He couldn't look at Gawain, who held his hands open in surrender, but was also biting his tongue very hard to keep himself from laughing. Merlin felt sure that if they made eye contact, they would not be able to hold in the laughter threatening to bubble over their lips. Magic wasn't even remotely necessary to get them out of this fix. Merlin simply waited until all three louts turned their backs on him, which they did quite promptly, seeming to forget about him entirely. Then he grabbed up a large branch with his right hand and Gawain's sword with his left, and felled one man with a solid blow to the back of the skull, while tossing Gawain's sword back to its rightful owner. Gawain had the other two assailants by the point of his sword before their friend's body hit the ground. Gawain and Merlin tied the three together around the trunk of a tree with the rope they had used to bind Merlin, badly. It was no easy task, convulsed as they were with mirth.
"Here, you tie it," Gawain hooted, grabbing Merlin's hands and physically placing them on the tangled mess he was passing for a knot. "I can't. My stomach hurts too much from laughing."
Merlin was not much better at it, shoulders and hands shaking from giggles that racked his body like sobs. The trussed-up bandits glared at them, unable to move, and spat ineloquent insults that only made Merlin and Gawain laugh all the harder. In the end, the whole debacle barely slowed down their travels. It had lasted less than 2 hours, and most of that time had been spent tying up the failed outlaws. It was all a bit anticlimactic. If this was the kind of peril Gawain meant to protect Merlin from, arguing with Arthur and jeopardizing his place in court, he needn't have bothered, really. As though reading his mind, Gawain said, "If anyone asks, we were attacked by a horde of very dangerous and highly trained assassins, and it took a lot of skill and effort to defeat them." "Deal. And tell them I did most of the work. Tell them I rescued you and stirred feelings of extreme awe and admiration in your breast."
"You did," Merlin agreed.
It wasn't until they arrived in Ealdor that they realized having Gawain along on the trip also meant having Gawain for the week Merlin stayed with his mother.
"Oh, Merlin, how you've grown," Uneth said, holding her son at arm's length and beaming.
"I've been past the growing stage for a long time now," Merlin said, embarrassed and pleased and just so happy to see her again.
"You've grown in my mind and spirit, if not in height," she insisted.
"I can see it in the set of your shoulders." She hugged him close, and in so doing caught sight of Gawain over his shoulder.
"And I see you've brought a friend?"
Gawain stepped forward and bowed deeply.
"My lady, Sir Gawain of Camelot, at your service."
"Are you a friend of Merlin's?" The question was ostensibly for Gawain, but she directed it at Merlin with a furrow between her brows.
"A friend, a travel companion, and now a humble guest begging for hospitality, if you'll have me."
"I'm not sure we have accommodations befitting a knight," she said, still shooting Merlin looks full of indecipherable significance.
"Don't worry, mother. Gawain has slept in far shabbier surroundings and enjoyed it." "It's true, I have," Gawain said, smiling at Merlin. "The floor by Merlin's bed would be a luxury." He turned his famous grin on high and aimed it at Uneth. Uneth was not the kind of woman to be taken in by a grin, no matter how famous.
"You may have the floor by the hearth, Sir Knight."
She shepherded the young men into her house, casting Merlin yet more significant looks of the unreadable maternal sort behind Gawain's broad back. Merlin shrugged in response, and attempted to explain that he had not meant to bring Gawain along to his childhood home. It was just that Gawain had volunteered to keep him safe on his journey. This explanation only served to earn him more looks. Una spent the next several nights staying up very late indeed, her ears pricked for sounds of movement, either from Merlin's room or from Gawain's spot on the floor by the fire. But she heard none. Gawain seemed to have no intentions to steal into Merlin's bed, which was a comforting thought. It rather thawed Huneth to the rakish knight and his unsettling habit of talking to her in extremely flirtatious tones. Merlin attempted to explain that this was just Gawain's normal default speaking tone, that he was permanently set to flirtatious, that it was part of his charisma. Like most of Merlin's defensive explanations these days, it only made Huneth look at her son significantly. When her woodpile ran low, she borrowed an axe from the farrier and readied herself for the work she was just starting to feel too old to do. She normally had the help of the farrier's son, but he was away for trade and wouldn't be returning for a few more days. Huneth had been a self-sufficient widow for too long to go cold waiting for the help of a strong man, so she rolled up her sleeves and brought back some logs from the communal stock. "Mother, please, let me do that," Merlin said, laying his hand on the axe's hilt. And she knew she had raised a good boy. She relinquished the axe to him and stepped back. "Not with magic," she reminded him. "Not outside where everyone can see." Merlin rolled his eyes. He selected a log and hefted the axe, but before he could swing down, Gawain approached and laid his hand on Merlin's back between his shoulder blades. "Allow me," Gawain said. "Don't be absurd. A knight of Camelot helps every woman who requests assistance, Merlin. It's in our code. You're interfering with the fulfillment of my duties. Arthur will be gravely disappointed to hear that a widow needed firewood, and I stood by and did nothing. He might strip me of my knighthood." "There's no woman who needs assistance right now, because I'm chopping the firewood. Would you just go away and wash your hair or something?" "Uther might even exile me again. Camelot has no use for ex-knights who have forsaken their duty, you know. Imagine your guilt then, when you reflect that it was all your fault for not letting me take this axe." "Your duty doesn't include doing my chores, Gawain. Running away to act like my squire on this trip was bad enough. If Uther finds out you've been doing domestic errands for me, he really will fly into a rage." "He won't find out," Gawain said, sliding the axe out of Merlin's unresisting fingers, despite his noises of protest. "Besides, I assure you, I am nobody's squire. I've been acting every bit as a knight this whole time." With that, he ushered Merlin away with a little push and got to work. Merlin smothered the ludicrous urge to bat his eyelashes at Gawain and went to join his mother, who had been standing by her front steps and watching the entire teasing exchange. They both stood watching the long lines of Gawain's back and arms flexing through his tunic as he chopped. "Merlin," Huna said after a while, "every time you come home, you bring some handsome young aristocrat with whom you have a certain romantic tension. Are you... I mean, there is a name for women who entertain noblemen. I'm not judging. I did ask Gaius to find you a trade. I just need to know so I know what to say when your cousins ask how you're doing."
"What? I just... what?"
It was hard to speak for the enormity of the horror clogging his throat. But eventually Merlin got all his facial muscles back under control and managed to splutter out a reply.
"First of all, no! Gawain and I are not... I am not anything professionally besides a servant to the prince and an apprentice to Gaius. Second of all, even if I were, which I stress that I am not, why on earth would you tell my cousins?"
"I was being hypothetical," Huneth dismissed. "Not," Merlin felt, "all that logically." They lapsed into a silence that could only be described as awkward, punctuated by the whiz-chink-bang of Gawain's continued wood-chopping. "And third of all," Merlin said eventually, "I don't make a habit of bringing around men with whom I have romantic tension. Arthur and I had no such thing."
"You did,"
Huneth informed him. "Not even near the amount you have with Gawain, though." As though on cue, Gawain straightened, finished his task. He leant the axe against the stump he'd used for chopping and tossed his sweat-soaked hair back, running a hand through it. He waved when he realized they were watching him. Merlin couldn't help waving back. When it came time to leave, Huneth clasped Merlin in a fierce hug and refused to shed tears. "I'll be back again," Merlin told her, hugging Bat just as hard. When they finally let go, Huneth surprised Gawain, hugging him too, just a light press of arms around him, but for long enough to be unmistakably an embrace. Gawain hadn't felt the kindness of a mother's arms in many years. The unexpected sensation moved him to make an unexpected promise. "I shall take care of him," Gawain said. "I shall guard his honor like a treasure." Huneth, who still hadn't fallen for Gawain's way of talking in all his time in Yeldor, laughed at him gently. "Save your vows for Arthur. My house is no court, it is a home. And any time you boys need to get away from the restraints of courtly honor, you are welcome here." Much later, when they were but an hour's ride from the gates of Camelot, and already bracing themselves for the berating they were sure to get from Arthur, Merlin asked Gawain what his mother had said to him when they left. "She said you should sneak into my chambers under the cover of night as often as possible." "She did not." "She did. I was positively shocked by her language." Merlin brought his horse up close and cuffed Gawain's head. "I'll not have you casting aspersions about my mother this way, Sir Gawain." "Did you know that my heart thrills when you call me Sir Gawain?" Merlin stopped short at the sudden and unprompted admission. He murmured something not only inaudible to Gawain, but incoherent to himself as well, making not words but sounds, giving voice to the scarlet warmth he felt spreading down his face. "It reminds me that I am a knight," Gawain continued. "I traveled without aim for a long time, without a home, without loyalties to tie me to any one place for longer than a fortnight. And now I am bound by the prefix Sir for infinite fortnights. Your mother taught me that home can also mean a place where one feels safe enough to leave knightly duties aside, at least for a brief respite." Merlin blinked at him, a single sweep of lashes that echoed the fluttering of Gawain's heart. "I'll race you back to Camelot," he said, spurring his horse forward. Gawain followed, laughing, delighting in the unsaid but still understood, "And I'll race you back to Yeldor next time." The end.